outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
So how are you adjusting to the new school year, Jay?
I don't think I've adjusted yet.
Spending a lot of time in your car, as I understand it.
Still, yes.
Yes.
More even now than 3 kids at 3 schools is no joke.
In 3 different activities after
yes.
school.
Yes.
And multiple nights out.
Yeah. There's only one high school in Moore Park, and we happen to live on the other side of town from that high school. So
it's a small town, but getting over there is a nightmare.
Yep.
It's the world's worst street
yes.
to be on. Yes.
And in the morning when everybody's trying to get back to the freeway to go to work, that's what I'm sitting in. So
you're having a lot of fun. You spend a lot of time with Jesus in your car.
Yes.
You got a good book you're listening to in there or anything?
A podcast or whatever I can find.
Oh,
entertain myself. Yes. It is That's a deal.
Crazy. You brought my book back.
I did bring your book back.
The Gift of the Jews. I did a blog on this a little while ago.
Yes.
What'd you think?
I liked it. It was very interesting. A different perspective and kind of laid things out differently than what you just read in the Bible. And yeah. I like some of the context that he gives to the stories.
And whether you agree with him or not, it's a great just mm-hmm. overview of the Old Testament
yes,
story
it is.
And
yes.
what happened and what God might have been doing. And not everybody agrees with everything he says, but I found it intriguing
yes.
to see how God, because I think this part's true, whether he's got all the details right to the story, but mm-hmm. that God was growing up society and civilization through mm-hmm. Abraham and the blessing to the whole world like he promised. And that's what I loved about, to see where God started with these people.
Right, and watching it get bigger and bigger as it kind of and changed. And yeah, it was
started
very
out with
a
man and
yep.
then a family and then a tribe and then a nation yeah. and then a disobedient nation. And then
yes.
And God's still trying to, I'm getting you down inside to value justice, kindness, compassion, to value those mm-hmm. things, which there's no evolutionary need for any of those things. In
right.
fact, they all get in the way of evolutionary thinking and survival of the fittest, and I just do what is best for me, and I don't give a rip about you. And I tell you what, I think it's a great overview of the Old Testament.
It is. People Very up. Good. I definitely enjoyed it.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson. This is my daughter, Julie, if you don't remember her from past podcasts, because gosh, it's been 6 weeks since you've been around. It's been crazy. You've been well, other than chasing kids all over town.
Yeah, wrapping up summer and got some time at Shaver Lake since our last podcast with you guys. So that was fun and
great.
It's been good.
Wow.
Kids back in school. And someone asked me the other day, you guys back on track with the new school year? And I'm like, I think I'm still trying to find the track.
We're still not, looking for a track.
I'm still looking for a track that kind of makes things a little more.
Doesn't feel well paced yet.
Not yet. We still feel like we're like, oh wait, we gotta go. What time is it? So we're still trying to sort it all out. We'll get on the track eventually. We'll get there.
So you get to the weekend, and then everything just evens out. And it's all relaxed, and
yeah, and then we start again Monday morning.
Yeah, well, I know today this switched 10 or 12 times.
Yeah,
it's probably a good thing you didn't come in the morning, like you said, because anything now pre lunchtime is painful for me.
Why?
Why? Because of you.
I know where this is going.
Because of you.
I know.
I'm doing this, what they either call intermittent fasting, which
yes.
sounds ridiculous.
It sounds a little interesting.
I like somebody said, periodic eating. The more positive way to look at it. But yeah, I'm eating all my meals now between noon and about 7 o'clock at night. And
uh-huh.
then nothing
yep.
for 16 hours, 17 hours.
Yep.
So noon comes, noon I'm fine, but you know what? About an hour before noon?
10, 11.
Oh my God, you told me I'll get used to it, Dad. You've been doing this a while.
I have been doing it a while, so I don't feel that way anymore. I'm good till like 11:30. I'm like, oh, okay, it's almost lunchtime. I'm good, but I'm fine until then.
But 11:30 to noon now is the longest 30 minutes ever. Right?
You got to find something to do.
Oh, it's good. I can get work done in the office, and I'm working, and I look up and going, 5 minutes? Really? I get that much done in 5 minutes? I'm back there, look up again? Yeah, crazy. You've been doing this a while. I started after vacation because I came back from my vacation 3 weeks at Shaver Lake with my wife, and you guys came up and visited a while and some other people. I came back the lowest I've weighed probably in 30 years, and I thought, you know what? I don't want to lose that.
Yeah.
And not that I didn't eat well on vacation. I did. We
yep.
were just incredibly active.
Active, yeah.
Yeah. So I can't sustain all that activity and try and actually work.
Get things done.
So yeah, I thought, well, this would be a good way to try it. And this morning, I'm the lowest I've probably been in 40 years.
Wow, look at that.
I don't know that you've ever known me this life. I know it doesn't look like much yet, but We're working on it.
It does, though. I can tell. It's different.
We're going to stay with it. And I don't know what I'm going to do when I travel. That's kind of confusing now.
Yeah. Well, even people, it's like, hey, you want to meet for breakfast? And I'm like, well, I'll have a tea with you, but I'm not going to eat breakfast with, you know, it's kind of like people socialize over meals and I don't do the early one anymore. So
tea and coffee is painful because I don't,
you don't do
it.
Either
and
one
they
of those.
Allow it. Some
they
reason
do. You could have tea and coffee. I don't do the coffee thing, but I'm happy with my tea.
Whoever invented this thing allows tea and coffee in the morning,
or
but
lemon
not
water. You could do lemon water.
Oh, lemon water. Diet Coke? Nope. Diet 7-Up? No.
Well, technically you shouldn't do those things anyways. Come on now.
Ever?
Yeah.
I don't believe any of that.
I do. I don't drink that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's good. There's more for me in the world. I've lived long enough. I never thought I'd get to 66, so here I am. So if I die in the next couple of years,
I'll have my Diet Coke.
You'll miss
Thank
me,
you
but
much.
I won't miss you because I will be somewhere quite glorious should that happen. But yeah. Hey, did you see the new book cover, girl?
Oh, it's so good.
In the back of the book.
I love it.
Oh, my gosh. We have been literally, we have been amazed at the reactions we've gotten to this book, A Language of Healing for a Polarized mm-hmm. Nation. And we've gotten the most incredible endorsements back from people as diverse as Ernie Johnson, the sportscaster, who gave us great quote. And Mark Laberton, who's president of Fuller Theological Seminary, gave us a great quote. And man, there's been, I got a whole raft of them, of people who've read the book and just said, wow. A lot of it is every American, the historian who's most dealt with the constitutional issues behind the bridge builder work I used to do. And he was a mentor of mine, a friend of mine when I did bridge builder stuff. He wrote a quote and said, every American ought to be required to read this book.
Wow. So
I know we're not going to do that, but
I can't wait. When's it supposed to be released out?
It's supposed to be out
officially
mid-November.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't do a normal book publishing, which is like a year in advance.
Yes.
You pick your pub date and you go through all that stuff. We're just going to
get it out.
We'll get it to the printer. We'll get it printed. We want it to be out for the election year coming up, even though it's not really about Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
It's more about our interpersonal relationships, but it's around the same things that polarize us. And so,
Right. Yeah,
very excited. I think the teams, Arnita and Bob, very excited. Though Arnita is not in the conversation right now. She is in England, watching her son play basketball, having the time of her life.
Cool.
So yeah, she's kind of not in the loop of the conversation these days, but she will be when she gets back. And yeah, so it's been awesome. Can't wait to see it kind of finally happen. And so,
I think of the past few books, this is the first cover that you actually picked that I liked. You always send me like a few.
Which one
do you like?
This hurts.
I didn't like the last few.
What do you got against Beyond Sundays?
You
did the photography.
Why
for that.
You never sent me pick from these three covers? I did do the photography, but you just did one. But Finding Church, I didn't like that cover.
You know what? This is the last podcast we're going to do together. You didn't like Finding Church.
Not of the three you sent me originally. I liked a different one.
Oh well, see, sometimes you can be wrong. That's what's painful.
Well, you sent me three for this one, and this is actually the one I liked. As soon as I saw it, I knew that was my favorite cover.
Yeah, I didn't like this one first, but
no surprise.
Everyone else did, so we went with it.
See, sometimes I'm right.
Yeah. Here's what Mark Laberton says, president of Fuller Theological Seminary. He said this, making space to hear, to know, and to care for people not in our tribe may be one of the most urgent and transformative things we could be doing. This book could be just the right practical help for our next steps at this important time.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, to get something like that from him, pretty cool. And so we'll I'm sure they'll be talking more about that next podcast with Kyle. Kyle's the, did you like our little blue sheep media thing?
I do.
The little,
it's a kind of funny little.
Yeah.
Little thing.
Can't wait to see it. The logo's hilarious. Hilarious. But we're talking about Parenting by Paul David Tripp.
Yep.
And those of you that, you know, kind of tune this out because this is parenting and you don't care about kids or you already had your kids or you're never going to have kids or whatever, this one is not going to be about parenting. This is everything about this spiritual journey. For me, this is my best chapter of the book so far.
Wow.
What about you? What do you think? You've read the whole book, though, so you've
got
a lot of chapters in your head.
Right.
I'm only on chapter four. Just four?
Yes,
I think
it's four. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I could answer my favorite chapter.
Did you like this
one? I do like this one, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I do.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of religious gobbledygook in this one, which is what I really like.
Right.
It really gets down to the core of, I think, where religion really blows it. Not with kids. with us ourselves. Right. So the chapter title is called Inability, and it's really recognizing that we can't do the things that we make mm-hmm. ourselves try and do.
Yeah, the principle is recognizing what you are unable to do is essential to good parenting.
And it's essential to this entire journey of living loved.
Yeah.
Because I think religion, it's sometimes intentionally and sometimes like inadvertently, mm-hmm. the whole Sunday morning sermon, here's the application, wake up Monday morning, and I know nobody does this. I love how much time pastors spend on application and how much people don't even remember it on Monday morning.
Right. But
the idea is, if I know the right thing to do, then I'll do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And this whole chapter is about our inability to change our kids.
Yes.
And I hope the conversation we have expands that to the inability we have to change ourselves.
Yeah.
Because that's also part of this whole process of learning to be God's kids on the earth.
So, and changing people around us even more than, I mean, it goes.
Yeah, I like changing people around me. I really do. Yeah. So do you feel like your parents tried to change you?
Well, I was going to say, I wonder how you read this and think about how you raised us. And, you know, some of the things he talks about of, you know, guilt and shame and fear and reward. And
never used any of those things, right?
Never. Yeah. But I know when I...
Don't you wish I could parent you now?
Yeah, could you have read this? Like, oh, I won't say how long ago, but...
This is amazing. Yeah, I read it 2 days ago. But this is amazing because we didn't have this baggage in our heads having to deal with this stuff. So we just, you know, used to pull the fear and shame tools out and reward, bribing kids to do what's right.
Right.
His most powerful point about that, I thought, was this. When you get your kids, or even when we are motivated by fear, shame, or rewards, we are still learning to be selfish.
Yes.
Because we're doing what we're doing for us.
Yes.
That's such an eye-opening reality. I don't think most people get that because...
Right.
Because for Christianity, a lot of it is just doing the right thing. It doesn't matter why you're doing the right thing. You do the right thing, God's happy. You don't do the right thing, God's angry. So you do the right thing. And if it's fear, if it's whatever that motivates you. But this is what I think I see through the whole of the Bible, going back to the gift of the Jews. The whole of the Bible is God wanting us to choose him for who he is. Mm-hmm. And doing right because it's right and because we have the internal transformation enough to embrace what's good, not doing it because we're afraid of the consequences.
Right.
And yet as fallen humanity, we're almost always afraid of the consequences.
Yeah, he says it's temporary, right? Like it's not going to stick. You're going to do it to get that reward and then you're going to go back to your old ways. There's not like a heart change that happens.
Yeah.
You're just doing it for the initial whatever it is, whether it's to avoid, you know, a fear or a consequence or to get a reward. And then you're going, but there's no change in your kids and your heart and whoever it is. It's just for that, you know, that moment.
And then who rules down the road is who's offering now the reward.
Yeah.
When a teenager cares more about the acceptance of their peers mm-hmm. than they do their parents,
yep.
then everything shifts because they've been trained to do what they want to do for themselves.
Right.
For what they want.
Right.
And even if it's fear, I remember as a kid, because I was schooled in more of a conservative, God wants you righteous, and, you know, it's strength of will, and I have a lot of will. I'm not like most people that, you know. If I, okay, wow. Why, would you like
that
to elaborate
funny.
Just a little
bit? I
thought
bit. You were being funny.
Oh, wow. That's really like the pot calling the kettle black. We always talk about you as our strong-willed child. But yeah, no, I can pretty much through force of will. Like if I set myself not to eat before noon, I'm a legalist about
it. Yeah, I'm too.
I don't stack at 11:59. Yep. I was sitting with somebody the other day, went out for just a conversation and was going to be, we're going to have beverages. But we, you know, at 11:30, I'm sitting there saying, I could order a Coke right now. But I didn't.
I was here last weekend and you're like, are you going to have that? And you know, it's not 12 o'clock yet.
That's right. You were cheating last week. Last week you were cheating.
But I do this every day for months. So one day is okay.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be a little more flexible, I think, when I travel. But that's beside the point.
Yes.
Strength of will.
Yeah.
I can make that work.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to be motivated for that. Like when I was a kid, there'd be these revival times or somebody's coming with a gift of prophecy or whatever, and you'd be afraid they're going to call you out your worst sin in front of everybody, and you don't want everybody to know what your worst sin is. So you try and be really righteous leading into that, or like the time I thought I missed the rapture, and then, man, for 3 days after that, I was the most righteous 11-year-old kid probably on the planet. But that lasts for me about 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then the fear kind of diminished. Eh, really, not coming yet. And not, it can't be, because you can't be perfect. You can't be these things in your own strength, which I think is the brilliance of this chapter. Yeah. It goes way beyond trying to change your kids.
Yeah.
It goes down to trying to change you.
Yeah. So. And in that, you know, inability that we have, it's turning to him. And for me, I read it very much as a parent, because that's the season I'm in right now, obviously. But the freedom that I find as a parent to know, I don't have to do this. I don't have to have all the answers, but I know that he's there walking this with me, and that I just have to keep turning to him. And that gives me freedom.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And just even in my own, you know, devotional life, loving others around me, whatever it is, if that's constant reminder that I don't have to have all the answers. I don't have to do this all on my own.
Yeah, which doesn't mean you don't care and you don't do nothing. Obvious, and now you become a couch potato because God does everything.
Right. My kids can do whatever they want, but no.
What I love is the participation that he talks about inside a growing relationship with God. No, I can't change me. But what I can do is respond to him every mm-hmm. day. And through that process, he gets to change me.
Right.
And same thing with our kids. We're teaching them about this God who loves them and can enable them. And mm-hmm. they need to rely on him and learning to trust him. And the story that God, was it Psalm 78, the story that God kept telling Israel to tell their kids, tell them about your faithlessness and my faithfulness. Mm-hmm. He want not tell them about performance and you've got to get it right. He said, talk about the times when you blow it.
Yeah.
And I'm, when you call to me and turn to me, I'm there because I love you. And, mm-hmm. you know, I want to fix things and I want to make you whole. And I want your life to be good. And that's the lesson. The lesson is not be good or God will whack you.
Right.
And I'm glad we didn't raise you with any of that.
None of it.
Oh, man. I have so many regrets about parenting. That's why it's scary having you here talk about parenting once in a while, or at least opening that door. Because, again, a lot of confidence in my ability. When I have the mm-hmm. full power over you by age, size, strength, wisdom, particularly before y'all were teenagers, when y'all were little kids and you're easy to scare, it's easy to, you know, drive the performance thing and put kids on that track. And
right.
I'm glad that began to change for us before you two left home.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah.
Because it allowed us to have those conversations, even the, I'm sorry, I would never do that today. But
right.
Boy, that's what we thought we had to do when we were there.
Yeah.
This quote, oh, sure, you can scare, reward your children into temporary change. You can temporarily buy them off or scare them off and withholding affection when they're upset at us. Boy, that's my big mistake there. But I'm reading that because this is not trying to change them means that you quit trying to exercise whatever power is available to you to get your children to change. And begin to think as a representative, representing the God who gives grace. For change means looking for daily opportunities to communicate that grace, helping our children to see how they need that grace, and modeling that grace in the way that we speak and act toward our children.
Yeah.
Love that.
I noticed a big difference in my own parenting and in a lot of just me from where I was a decade ago to now. And I think a lot of that, I'm older and wiser or whatever, but it's kind of this too. I was, especially in my parenting ways, I was very much fear, you know, scare my kids and threaten them and offer rewards. And I, you know, I still do rewards and I still, you know, yell and I still do some of that, but it's different now because when it comes down to it, I do want to have this heart change with them. I want to know what's going on in their heart. And that's what I care most about. And so yelling at them and screaming at them or whatever, like that's not the way to do that. That just makes everything worse. But I notice even in my own life with other relationships, it's that same sense of having more patience and more taking more time to really get to the heart of other people and maybe their struggles or whatever it is, to just be able to relate to them in a different way too.
And I've watched that happen for you. I mean, you started out as kind of one of those badass parents.
Yeah.
Kind of like
I was raised that way.
Yeah, that's the only model you had.
That's what you do.
Mostly mine, because mom wasn't that way as much as I was.
Yes.
She could be at times. It's because
she could
I'm,
be. She chased me around the room with a wooden spoon. I remember that.
Oh, wish we had video. That'd be awesome video, wouldn't it? Yeah, she had that shirt, which she regrets to heck now, but I'm the mom, that's why.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what we were kind of all taught. But I definitely was the one that, you know, if the fear needs to be lowered, I will lower it. And man, I'm glad you guys turned out okay in spite of all that. I really am. I saw an email this week from someone. I was trying to find it here because I printed it out. but I cannot find it. So I don't know where it vanished to, but it's something that a boy had written, a boy, okay, mid-20s, probably mid to late 20s, wrote on Facebook and said, I know my parents probably not going to like this. I know my youth pastor's not going to like it. I know blah, 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 blah. But Christianity is effed up. And he just went off on, I am not a Christian, will not be a Christian. What you did to me when I was young, did to me when I was a teenager was wrong. It will always be wrong. And the parent posted in a private part of Facebook, mm-hmm. so I'm not telling who it is. I had a lot of mixed emotions about that. I think that's what I hate most about the religion of Christianity.
Yeah.
Is it talks a talk, it doesn't walk. Mm-hmm. And then so many teens, 20s, they get to that age and they go, okay, that's it. I'm not playing that game. Mm-hmm. And particularly if it's been abusive in some way. It sounds like this guy's been majorly abused whatever he grew up in. And he was really being gracious to his parents. So he wasn't putting that on his parents. Mm-hmm. He was just putting it on the religious environment and how he's responded to it later. And if I was a conscript, if I had to do these things out of fear or shame or reward, then when I'm finally free enough that I don't have to,
right?
Boy, now you look back with resentment at the very thing your parents hoped you would love.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Christianity as a religion, I think, continues to do that.
Right.
And it hurts people. I remember being in Tulsa, gosh, probably 15, 20 years ago, maybe. I was with a large group. It was a church that met in a country western bar. They had bought the bar.
That's cool.
I mean, a bar that would seat probably 700-800 people. It's huge. And they bought it and they were meeting there. And I met with their leadership over a weekend because they really loved He Loves Me. And I got a question I'd asked. That's why I love conversations. I found myself, when the words came out of my mouth, I went, what? I've never said that before. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. And it's hard to take notes on you when you're talking, but and that's why I love conversations, because I don't try to retreat to, okay, I've been asked this before. What do I say when this is asked? I'm always kind of in the moment. Try to be in the moment. I try to answer it. But I was asked this question. What do you think is the greatest barrier to people living inside the love of God? And what I found myself saying, when I say it that way, two things. I think the Holy Spirit gives me those words. I think that's when Jesus like says to Peter, John, boy, flesh and blood hasn't revealed that to you. My Father's in heaven. I think partly that. But also when I said it, I went, that's what you've been trying to teach me. That I see that theme going back weeks and months in my own journey and not hearing it yet. Not hearing it till I said the overestimation of our own capability. That was exactly the words that came out. The overestimate. And they went, what? I'm going, let's think about that. Because I don't think I've ever heard that before. The overestimation. And Paul's saying, others put confidence in the flesh. I put none. Even though I could boast in my flesh far more than anyone else, I'm not going to do that. I put no confidence in the flesh, which is back to, it's that human performance element. We think of flesh oftentimes scripturally as flesh as, well, the evil things we want.
Right.
And the flesh is what I'm able to do for God is never going to get me where God wants to get me.
Yeah.
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 And I've thought about that phrase probably every week since I said it and wrote it down and went, wow, that. And I get into situations where I get frustrated and I'm going, okay, is this because of the overestimation of my own capability? That if I could just somehow white knuckle my way into some right thing to do, then I would get the outcome I want.
Right.
And it's just a lie.
It is, yeah.
And I see how much that plays. The whole 12-part email exchange I did at Livestream, this guy whose wife was dying of lung cancer, then died, and just the crisis of faith, because his belief system was, if I believe enough, if I can believe this, God wants to heal her. And that healing is in our control if we meet the requirements Jesus gave us. So, and I mean, that's just the way the Bible's been interpreted for so long. Here's what the Bible says. If you do input A, you're going to get output B. Mm-hmm. And that's where their faith really reached his more than her. She was the one dying, so God's prepping her for the next life.
Yeah.
He's losing his best friend and struggling with it. And you can read all that if you haven't yet at lifestream.org. But as he goes through that process, the thing he believes can change this is his capacity to believe. If I believe enough, and those things are drawn off, you know, proof texts, like, you know, if you believe and do not doubt in your heart, then God will move. And people take that teaching and say, see, if we'll just have enough faith, then we can get the outcome we want, which is still putting trust back in ourselves.
Yeah.
It's how hard I can. And then whoever can. I mean, he was convinced, he and his wife did completely believe that, and it still didn't happen.
Wow.
And I don't ever give myself that much credit. Right. I always, I'm sure I didn't believe enough. But the whole idea of, and what it misses is, and this is what I hate about proof texting scripture, is you take that little verse and then you say, okay, if I can just convince myself enough, God will have to give it to me. I mean, just that thought alone ought to make people stop and think, well, that's not even what the Bible is about. Yeah. The totality of it is I'm leaning inside his reality, what he wants. I'm not using this to get what I want from him or force his hand to heal or whatever. But some people, I mean, there's a thing now called commanding prayer, which I get to command God or command something to happen. If I do the technique right, I'll get the result I want.
Well, then when you do that, what are you left with when it doesn't happen?
You're left with being a bad Christian.
Yeah.
Or God's a fraud. Those are the only two places.
Yeah.
And that's probably where this kid came to. God's a fraud. I've worked that stuff and it's not changed me. It's not made a difference in my life. And I think so many in our culture, we had Brad and I talked last week about all these pastors that are leaving the faith and just saying, I'm done with it. It doesn't work for me. There's no reality to it. I think it stems to the same thing. When we put all the pressure for this to work on humanity, then we're just going to end up with a human machine that not only doesn't work, but ends up abusing people.
Right.
And teaching our kids how to live inside that God's a reality and that he loves you and he wants to work on you, change you. We did some of that right. Remember when you had swim lessons?
Yeah.
And we just talked about, you know, trusting that Jesus would take care of this fear and we'd be praying for you. And we kind of got into that. We didn't do that well all the time, but that was one of those times where it was really because I knew we couldn't make it happen.
Yeah.
I couldn't beat fear out of you.
Right.
I think we offered you a reward of some kind if you could get through your lesson.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because rewards are good. You like ice cream, or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Rewards work.
I can fake not being afraid for ice cream.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Pool, no big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I in so many areas of our experience, and I think I have this feeling often when I'm talking to people who are telling me, this doesn't work for me. You know, I've been seeking God. I've been doing this. I've been doing that. I'm doing my part. God's not doing his part.
Yeah.
Almost always in the back of my head is, there's some performance thing going on here still.
Yeah.
That you're looking for God to reward. And it's because if I've done all this and that hasn't happened, then again, either I'm not good enough or God's a fraud. That's what people come to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want them to come to that.
No, no.
Man.
It's not a good place to be. And I don't want, you know, my kids to come to that either. You know, I want my kids to find, I mean, there comes a point where they have to discover what God is to them. And I know so many Christian parents that are fearful that they want their kid to pick this and this is the most important and the things that they do to push religion on them. I'm like, but somehow I understand the motivation because they're scared. They don't want them to not be following God and trusting all of those things.
Which shows the parents living by fear, right? And then I'm projecting that fear.
Yes.
I'm not just trying to get my kid and afraid. I'm living in that fear. And doggone, if you don't get this right. I go to heaven and you go to hell, I'll be devastated.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, I mean, gosh, I don't want to put that on my kids, you know?
No, no. Remember your first semester college roommate? Remember the pillowcase her mom gave her?
Oh my gosh. Do you remember what it says?
I remember what it says.
I vaguely remember. Yes.
She was a pastor's daughter. So this is a pastor's wife, brings her to college, moves her into your room. We met him and talked to him during the day. And then right as the mom gets ready to leave, gives her this present.
Mm-hmm.
She opens it up. Remember what it was?
It was the pillow?
It was a pillowcase.
Yes.
Pillowcase.
I don't remember what it said. What did it say?
It was a pillowcase and she had embroidered in
it. Yes. I can see it, but I can't remember.
Yeah. It was all this advice about don't drink alcohol.
Yes.
Read your Bible every day. Don't have sex. No abortions. I mean, just I looked at Sarah and went, oh my gosh, this is going to go horribly bad.
And it did.
And it did. Oh, yeah, it did. I remember that. We remember walking out of there going, I'm glad we didn't make that for Julie.
Yeah.
Here's all the rules. Because what Paul said was, when you have the rules, sin increases all the more. when we're confronted with rules, then you've got to be confronted with the fear to keep those rules. And if you're not, and mom is going home.
Yeah.
And mom thought the pillowcase is going to be me on your bed every night.
Yeah, look at it and remember.
Yeah. And it wasn't that. It can't be that. So as soon as mom goes away, now it's...
I think the pillowcase went away too.
And you could see it in her eyes. When she opened that present, she was humiliated that we were in the room seeing it. I felt bad. I want to just get you and leave because I just felt bad for her.
Yeah.
Here's mom going to bang her with the rules one more time.
Yeah.
And not even a month or two into college, she'd broken most of those rules.
I think all of them,
yeah. All of them.
On our way to the rest.
I don't remember how many were on there. I remember seeing a pillow that was just covered in phrases. It wasn't like two or three big phrases. Yeah. It was like 40 or 50 on both sides, just stitched in. I'm sure mama's stitching it in.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that stayed in her bed anywhere.
Probably I don't think she... she probably thrown away that evening.
Oh, man.
Well, you have to keep it around just in case mom shows up. Yeah. Hey, you still got that pillowcase I gave you? Yeah, I do. Here it is. Wow.
But how much hurt that I saw. I mean, she had a rough semester, but the other side of that is how hurt she was by so many... I don't know. I guess you could say just by her parents. She would probably say the religion. And, you know... You put that kind of expectations and rules, and who wants to follow that?
Right.
Who wants to try to live up to? I mean, it wasn't about just loving God and following Him. It's about following all these things to be a good Christian or to be a good kid. And
you feel that thing about, which you, fortunately you didn't have to grow up with being a pastor's kid, but.
Yeah, I don't know what that's like.
being in this goldfish bowl of. Her example reflecting back on her parents. So that this is a lot of work for her to do to keep her parents whole.
Right.
It had that feel to it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Someone said this to me, and I wish I could remember who, because I would tell you right here who it was, but I'm not sure. So if you did, you can let me know, and I'll source you from now on. But someone said to me one time, and this is one of those things that kind of works its way into your heart and transforms you. He says, we need to look at every command Jesus gave us as a promise.
Hmm.
That if it's our ability to do, like, love your enemy, like, if you've got the capacity to do that, you know, you're dead. And if you try to pretend you love your enemy, that's not even the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, by looking at all of Jesus' commands as a promise, then we're looking to him to fulfill it in us.
Yeah.
And I remember that when I was asked in Kenya, does God want us to love our enemies? And I was doing a workshop on living loved, and I got asked that question. He said, he said, did God tell us to love our enemies? And I said, yes. And this is a seminar of pastors, 800 in a barn in Kenya as we were being attacked by wasps. That was the other thing going on. That was hilarious. I'd see these wasps come out of the nest in the back of the room and fly straight at my eyeball and then de-tear off as they got about 2 feet away. And I just kept watching it happen going, this is freaking weird.
I'd be like,
dude,
let's take this outside.
No, it was too hot outside. It was bad shade.
Man.
But then he said, what if your neighbor raped your wife and burned down your house? And you could tell by the way he asked it, it wasn't hypothetical.
Yeah.
Because they just lived through that tribal violence. And I found, again, one of those moments when you say the right thing and you look back and go, wow, that had to be a whole lot of grace. But I look at him and say, I think what it's saying is God has enough love to put into your heart that you will one day love your neighbor or love your enemy. But that's not something you can do or I can do.
Yeah.
Those are ridiculous. And there's a lot of Jesus statements that are like that. And if you take on Jesus' statements as, okay, this is the favor line, this is where I've got to achieve, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's not going to work, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you're going to fake it like it is working. Yeah. You're gonna see that you are, just like the rich young ruler. Oh, yeah, I'm doing all
I'm
that
I'm doing
stuff.
It, yeah.
Yeah. And at three, it's not going to reward you in the way, which is why those people pray a lot, like I did when I was in this whole trap. I would pray a lot, say, God, after all I'm doing for you, you couldn't do this one little thing for me. That tells you right there, I'm in that whole thing of I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know what, I've got no hope of this. So I every time I read something, that means that remain in me and I'll remain in you. That's a promise.
Yeah.
So Jesus, how are you going to teach me to remain in you? Which keeps it from being the couch potato thing. Inability does not mean, oh, I just sit around then and let Jesus do everything. Yeah. No, I wake up every day. And part of that proverb stuff's come back to me too. You've got to seek wisdom like you're seeking a treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think wisdom is God. It's a person of wisdom. It's not... and Proverbs even postures it that way. It's not just having wise thoughts in your head. It's a personality. It's a person. And so seek him like gold and silver. And that, not the effort of I'm reading my Bible 5 hours a day and I'm praying. Yes. It's not that. Right. It's just the focus of the heart and the leaning in and watching for the nudges, knowing that I can't change me, but I want him to.
Yeah.
And I love holding stuff before God saying, you know what, God, this isn't fixed yet.
Yeah.
And I just so you know, I know.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, and I don't like that I react that way or respond that way, and so I want you to come change me, and he does over time.
Yeah.
That's the fruit of, I think, living loved. You look back at the things that have changed, and you go, wow, I don't even know how those changed.
Yeah. So, that's when you know it was God.
Yeah, because
it's not totally out of your ability to have made your way there.
Because I've done both. I've spent 40 years doing the performance thing. I've spent 25 years doing the transformational thing, and I love looking back at something going, I don't respond there like I used to.
Yeah.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And then I know, but I know it's not me. I know, and it's not me trying hard. Something has changed internally that I don't think the way I used to think. Therefore, I don't react the way I used to react. I don't have the same emotions I used to have. So they're not there to resist. Mm-hmm. They're just not there.
Yeah.
And I love that. I wish he'd get on it and change more. Yeah. And Sarah does too. Sarah's always like, yeah, I wish you'd get on more of that. And you probably do too, except now I don't see it that often. So I can be on my best behavior.
There's a moment. No, just kidding.
There are moments, Dad. Okay. Would you like to, I'm sure we'll get email about that. Would you like to highlight some of those bigger moments?
Another podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And the transformation that comes inside that. I've seen it in your life for sure. I've seen how you started out parenting kids. When you talk about conversations you're having with your kids, and I said this, and they said that, and then I had this thought, and I just go, man, that's just amazing.
Oh, man, and some of those moments are the moments I walk away going, that was not me. I don't know who had – that was not my voice. That was – and I know that was God. Like, and – but I
– I'm not that reasoned. I'd have slept that kid.
Yeah. No. And we've talked about this before, but I take those moments to walk away and take that time. But I think that's also a moment of me, okay, God, you got it, like – what am I, how do I, you have to help me with this conversation. And that's that moment where I really try to get it right with God so that I can have those conversations and take time to pray about it. But I have a teenager. So some of the conversations we have, I go in holding my breath going,
some of you, God, help you don't me. See them coming.
Yes.
You don't know.
That happens too. And then I'm in the middle of it going, oh God, help me here. But I more so recently, I have left so many conversations with my kids going, that was not me. That was, and even my husband looked at me recently. We're having this difficult conversation. And he's like, well, that was really good. And I was like, I don't know where that came from.
It was amazing.
I was like, I could have said, I'm like, I know I'm amazing, but I did not. I said, I don't know. That was not me.
Oh, I don't mind just going, well, that was amazing. And that obviously was not me.
Yes.
I want so many more of those moments where you could say it's not flesh and blood that's done this, but my Father's revealed something to you. And don't you love coming away from a conversation that you've been in and you want to think about it for the next couple of days because you said things and responded in ways that weren't normal.
Yeah.
And you want to go, okay, God, what was going on there? And what have you shown me?
Yeah.
And not only what does this mean for my teenage kid? Mm-hmm. What does this reality mean for my relationship with you? Because that's where I see those things come back to me going, wow, well, that was a real moment of grace. Not even grace I give me.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, what can I learn from that? I love conversations and thoughts like that that are wonderful. So we didn't talk about the book a lot. We don't have much time either. So you got anything else there that you wanted to highlight that we didn't talk about?
No, I think we, in a roundabout way, covered a chunk of it.
Yeah. I like this paragraph. It's vital that you believe and admit that you have no power whatsoever to change. And it says here, your child. But if you have vital, you believe and admit that you have no power whatsoever to change you, your spouse, your boss, your siblings, your just keep filling in the blanks.
Yep.
And that gives us the freedom to live in the world, not as performance-based people, but I want to learn to live in the Father's love. Mm-hmm. I want that love to shape me in a way that I'm passing it out to people that I know where possible. But that admission of I can't do this. And I think that's why some people always talk about, I was really trying to follow God until I came to the end of my rope. And really it's like, okay, well, God needed to break me. And I hear that theology and I hate it because I don't think it's true. But what they were really saying is I came to the end of myself and I stopped trying to fix me. And that's where breakthroughs happen.
Right, right.
Because until we give up, we're still trying to do what is God's to do.
Yeah.
That's so important. I think we kind of, so I love scripture. I love scripture. It always reminds me, oh, this is God's, this is not Wayne's to do. This is God's to do. And if I follow him, I hope it happen. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And it's afternoon, so I get to eat. So that's always good.
Woohoo.
Yay.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.